Time now for NHL Hour with Bill Clement and Commissioner Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Are you having fun yet? I mean, is anybody having fun with the playoffs? Because I sure as heck am.
I am, too. I'm fantastic. Tired, though. While I miss seeing games or being at games every night, the fact of the matter is it's exhausting, especially when you're watching the games from the West Coast.
No doubt. I can't get there. I mean, I just can't stay up that late.
A man of your age and fitness, I can't believe it.
No. There's something wrong. I need to go and get a physical, I guess.
Actually, did you watch the game on Sunday night, Monday morning between San Jose and Dallas?
Not all of it, no.
Oh, I did.
Did you really?
Yeah, of course.
Congratulations.
Well, no, actually, I was a little tired. I was in San Jose on Friday night.
Okay.
And I red-eyed back, so I didn't get any sleep on Friday night. And Saturday night was okay, but then Sunday...
Killer.
And then I got up at 6 in the morning on Monday morning, so I was... as close, although some people would say I'm a zombie all the time, I was as close to a zombie as I get on Monday. But the hockey has just been terrific.
Spectacular.
Are you surprised with as close as the first round was? You know, we had, I think, 48 out of a potential 56 games, which if it wasn't a record, it was somewhere close to one. Were you surprised at how quickly the second round matchups ended?
You know, we talked about that, and I thought you brought up a good point, and you said that there's such a fine line that you can win three consecutive games. I started to think about that, and the more I think about it, if we had the best of 11 or the best of 13 or the best of 15, most of those series would probably go 11 or 13 or 15 games. But in 1 week, you know, you can win three consecutive games. As it turned out, though, the San Jose series with Dallas turned out to be a little closer than we thought. The Flyers-Montreal series was close. Five-game series can be a lot closer than they seem.
That's exactly right. Colorado-Detroit, I think the injuries just took their toll on Colorado.
Detroit.
So where are you off to next?
Pittsburgh. Yeah. We're opening.
What a surprise.
Well, NHL Radio, the esteemed Greg Baldinger will be alongside.
That's why I was giving you the opportunity to plug what's coming next.
Coming next is... for me?
Yes.
Oh, tomorrow night I'm doing the Pittsburgh. I've got Eastern Conference, so I'm thrilled to death. I'll be working with Sam Rosen, and Billy Jaffe will be doing sidelines. So we're revved up and ready to go, and it's going to be hockey at its finest, because it's going to be extremely a tough physical series. It'll be a series for real men, not for guys that don't like to get their noses dirty and their faces all messed up. So that I look forward to. I think that creates a greater spectacle.
You love the physical play.
I always did when I was watching it, not when I was in it.
That's something that you and Don Cherry have in common, and we'll be talking to Don a little later in the show.
Apparently, he's making the trek by car from, he's going to be in Pittsburgh, and he's driving with Ron McLean from, as I understand it, from Toronto to Pittsburgh. Is that right, Greg?
That's fascinating. Greg, people can't see you nod. This is radio.
That's right. That is right.
We're not being simulcast yet. This isn't your noon show. Last night, on a bit of a somber note, although it was a celebration of a great life, I was in Columbus for the memorial service for John McConnell. For people who don't know who John McConnell was, in addition to being the founder of Worthington Industries, he was the majority owner of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and he's actually responsible for the fact that there is a franchise in Columbus and a magnificent arena. I don't know if you've been there and seen the arena district. But having this arena created a whole new area in downtown Columbus with restaurants and clubs and housing and office buildings. It's another indication of what a difference a major league team and an arena can make to a city. But it was a beautiful memorial service and a great celebration of a life.
Never met the man, but I met a lot of people that know him, and they all speak very highly of him.
They actually, and not to belabor the point, there was a video they used of me telling a story of the first time I met him. It was over 10 years ago when we were there in Columbus on the expansion tour. And to make a long story short, the last element of our visit in evaluating our expansion applications back in 96 and 97 was a meeting with the potential ownership group. And at the time, they were going to build a new building with public funds, and it required a referendum. So I asked the people making the presentation whether or not, if the referendum fails, they had a plan B, and they said, absolutely not. We're going to withdraw our application if there's no positive referendum in public funding. And as I was leaving the room, and it was a very pleasant meeting, somebody grabbed me, pulled me into the corner, and whispered in my ear, don't listen to that. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get a team here. And that was John McConnell.
Oh, that's a fantastic story. And the franchise is great fans in Columbus, without a doubt. By the way, our phone number for callers, we'd love to chat with you. Gary Bettman, NHL's commissioner, will answer your questions. 877-645-6696, 877-645-6696. And as I walked into the NHL store here, sponsored by, powered by Reebok, and our studio, one of the fellows that works here, Mike, came up to me and says, it's my 25th birthday today. So I said, okay, we'll wish Mike happy 25th. He's down there getting ready to celebrate tonight. Then I get up here, and our esteemed engineer, Dan Cronin, who missed a week of the show because he was on jury duty, informed me that he was part of a high-profile trial. Was that? I didn't know that. The Uma Thurman stalkers trial.
Wow.
Dan Cronin was one of the jurists that found the dude guilty.
Wow. So you are a, guy who believes in the letter of the law, convicted him. Did Ms. Thuman actually testify herself?
She did. She testified for about 6 hours last Thursday.
Really?
Was
she a good witness? This is the lawyer in
she
me.
Was.
Not the
no, she was.
Me.
Trust me, my dad.
She had Dan at hello.
My father, who's an attorney, asked me the same thing. And a couple of jurors held it against her because they thought,
that she
well, maybe
acting.
She's acting.
Wow.
And, another juror says, I don't think she's that good of an actor. Come on.
Wow.
So it was interesting. Definitely pretty cool for your first time getting selected to jury duty, period.
Welcome back. Did it make you decide you either wanted to become a lawyer or a judge or a stalker?
No.
or Uma Thurman?
I've definitely been dissuaded from being a stalker, that's for sure.
Well, that's
from
a good
trial.
Thing. Absolutely. So, well, welcome back. We
thanks.
Missed you.
Good to be back.
Widely quoted in the local newspapers. He was on every local news channel. He was besieged because of his charisma when he walked out of the courtroom. Before we get back to hockey, with all of the music, and we go back and forth about music in the show, what's the best concert you ever saw? Was there one that stood out?
There actually was. There have been a few, okay? And so that's a tough question. I saw Bruce Springsteen play in 1973 before the E Street Band was formed at a bar in Roslyn, New York called My Father's Place. And then I saw him a month later. I think I told this story.
Yeah, you did.
I went to, with my then girlfriend and now wife, up to the Hobart College homecoming, and we showed up and for $5 walked into this movie theater and saw him again a month later sitting 10th row center. The only other concert that really sticks in my mind like that was, and you'll like this, the Allman Brothers, because I know how you like the Southern Rock.
Yes, sir.
And I was a student at Cornell, and we went to Albany. We're at the State University there. I forget which year of college it was. And they started playing for a couple of hours. And it was a very hard to get ticket because it was a small venue. And somebody called in a bomb scare of all things. Oh. And it so infuriated the band that they played till like 4 in the morning after we came back. So that was particularly memorable.
What about the one concert that you would like to see that you never have? If you could have seen or could see one that you never have, what would it be?
You know, that's a tough question for me to answer. And we really got off hockey today, but that's okay.
We're getting
okay.
back to it, though.
The reason is I really don't like going to concerts anymore. You know, it's not that I'm antisocial or anything, but the ordeal isn't the right word. They tend to be more crowded than I like.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, it's an age thing. It's like you not being able to stay up all night to watch the games.
Right.
You know, I tend to avoid concert crowds.
You a Steely Dan fan at all?
I like Steely Dan.
The best concert I've ever seen was 2 years ago, and it was at one of the casinos in Atlantic City. And I go for music reproduction, the accuracy and the legitimacy of the music that is reproduced live based on the recordings they have. They were unbelievable.
You know who's good that way? And it's a concert I saw about 3 years ago at the new arena in Phoenix, the jobbing.com arena where the Coyotes
right.
play. I was there for a game, and next night the Eagles were playing. And I had never seen them in concert before. And what is staggering to me is the number of great songs and hits that they
really
had, because every single song,
yes, I know this
was,
one.
You know, is it was great.
Right.
You know. Anyway,
our board's kind of on fire. Once again, the phone number, 877-645-6696. See, we know nobody's going to call and ask questions about music, so we get that out of the way so we can talk hockey.
Well, you know, I don't think people tuned in to listen to the Music Hour or our particular tastes in music and concerts.
I get to visit with you for 30 seconds as you breeze in the door and 30 seconds on the way out, so...
Well, you can come upstairs and visit.
I
don't come down late to offend you.
No,
I'm
no.
doing other things.
I'm assuming you go back to work when you go
exactly
there.
Exactly right.
Well, then I can't come with you.
Well, but, you know, I can make time for you.
Oh, thank you.
On that note, let's go to David in South Carolina. You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I want to ask a question about the diving penalty.
Okay.
What is your perspective on it? I always thought that either... he was, hooked down, or he wasn't. Why do they send both guys to the penalty box?
That's a very good question, and the answer is you can be hooked down, but if you try to embellish it to make clear that a call should be made, if you really take the fall and dive further to make it look worse than it actually was, then, in effect, you're doing something unsportsmanlike, and that's being penalized as well. We don't want... to do anything to encourage diving. The officials don't need any help. If there's a hook or a hold or a high stick, they're going to see it to the best of their ability, and having the player on the receiving end of that act, he doesn't need to do anything more to try and convince the official.
I like it. I'm hoping next year we can get to the point where when a player just throws his head back every time somebody makes contact with his chest, that will be called diving.
Well, you know,
or embellishing.
We actually had an interesting moment during an NBC broadcast. There was a high stick on Sidney Crosby, and this actually goes to the In the Glass segment with Pierre Maguire down on the ice. And Pierre thought that Sidney Crosby had embellished because his head went back, as you just described. And because of where Pierre's located, down between the benches, Sidney heard that that's what Pierre had said, and he went over to him during the game and said, "Look at my mouth guard." And it had a black mark on it from the tape of the stick, and Pierre wound up apologizing. These things are very hard to detect, and we want players to play the game. We don't want them acting.
Show me the evidence, though. Show me the black mouth. Let the ref not make the call, then go up to the player. If there's no mark, there's nothing going on, it's like, psst, you're gone.
You know, it's a tough enough game to officiate.
No, it is.
Without the embellishing. And
but the players are learning how to take advantage. Everybody, listen, you get every advantage you can. So the players know how to simulate extremely well.
Well, and we've had a crackdown on diving. The last caller's point about how can you call both penalties, we've explained
sure.
it. But we've also, you know, we circulate lists and guys get punished with fines and the like for diving because... as I said, the game's hard enough to officiate. We don't need the officials being tricked.
Down with diving.
Down with diving. Ian in Toronto, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204. How are you?
How are you today, sir?
We're doing great. What about you?
Very good. I just wanted to ask a question regarding like the vacant GM job in Toronto and all that. I've heard speculation like today on TSN and all that they're we're thinking of hiring Dave Nolan, even though he did get fired. I was wondering, since he's still under contract, wouldn't that be tampering?
Well, as a general matter, if you're still under contract, you can get permission. And in most cases, when somebody's under contract and being paid but has been fired, the club will frequently give permission because they get the salary offset for the new payments that are being made when the person who was fired gets the new job. So my guess is Vancouver would very likely give permission if it was asked.
How do you react when you hear that a coach or a GM has been fired, or is that based on your relationship with them? Is there a general reaction?
As a general matter, you never want to see anybody get fired. As a personal event in somebody's life, it's very difficult, it's very public, it impacts your family, not just in the fact that you've been publicly fired, but in our business it means you're probably going to wind up moving your family somewhere else, so there's a dislocation. I think it's very hard. In some cases in our game, in our business, people deserve it, and in some cases you scratch your head and say, you know, why did they get fired? You know, was everybody impatient? I'm not referring to any specific instance here, but I think it varies case by case. And in some, in most instances, I think when somebody gets fired, if not all, it's because there is a desire for the team to do better.
Sure.
You know, the people that own our teams are extremely passionate about the game, and they're passionate about winning. And that's what drives them. That's why you get into this game and business.
Sure.
And when there is a perception that either a manager or a coach is not performing what's expected, then the inevitable happens.
And
most coaches and managers will tell you that they get hired
to get fired.
To get fired.
Do any ownership groups come to you for advice, knowledge, direction when they're in their search mode, looking for, say, a new general manager?
They'll ask.
I mean, you know them all.
Yeah, and we get asked, and we never disclose what we tell.
Of course not.
And we always talk to the owners in confidence. But our opinions are asked, and what I always tell the owners, the great thing about when we're asked for our opinions on things like that is you don't have to follow what we say. You can ask our opinion, and you can do what you want. You can ignore our advice, and it won't hurt our feelings.
There you go.
There we go. And here we go to James in Maryland. You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Bill and Gary, it's an honor to speak to you. Actually, Bill kind of stole my question.
Make a new one up.
By the way, it's nice to talk to you anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you.
How's the weather in Maryland?
Actually, it's raining, and they're calling for lightning and thunder later on.
Ouch.
So, yeah.
According to the board, you're a Leafs fan. What are you doing in Maryland?
It's a long story, Commissioner. It'd be one of those 8-hour calls.
Oh, but, okay. Well, not today.
Let's get back to the weather forecast.
Yeah. Actually, I had two questions. The last guy from Toronto kind of had... There were reports that Colin Campbell, who works with you, and he's the dean of the officiating, or I guess whatever, vice president of
hockey operations.
He runs hockey operations.
Right. Is a possible candidate for the job in Toronto. I'm sure you saw the press conference, as we all did yesterday. As a Leafs fan, I'm going to be 40 in July. I want to say we're almost like the Cubs of the baseball league. We're a franchise, original six franchise. I'm begging you, please get with them. Make sure that they don't, excuse my language, screw the pooch. Ooh. Because our franchise really needs a winner in Toronto. And they're a license to print money, and, you know, everybody knows all that. But when you miss the playoffs for three straight years, and then you have a fan base that's killing for a winner, and then finally their AHL team is in the playoffs, it's only going to make it worse and worse for us fans. And then my second question is, as far as Ron McLean and Don Cherry, you guys have this nice repartee, Commissioner, and there are people that sometimes say that you guys don't like each other. Maybe he puts those tough questions to you. I'm just wondering if you and Ron McLean actually are on each other's Christmas card list, or is there a general, lack of a better word, a dislike for one another, and I'll hang up and listen. But it's a great show, and Bill, congratulations on all your work.
Thank you.
I am delighted with both questions, and so everybody has to please excuse my rambling responses. On the first point about who the Leafs are going to hire, I assure you that there's nobody more passionate about winning than the Leafs ownership and management. They desperately want this team to excel.
We had Richard Petty on the show. He was fantastic.
Wants to achieve greatness. They know they have unprecedented fan support. When you're at the Air Canada Center on a Saturday night and there's a Hockey Night in Canada game being televised throughout the country, you feel like you're in the center of the universe. And they don't take that for granted. In fact, it drives them crazy that the team hasn't performed better because they want it. And the final analysis, I have absolutely no say over who's hired. That is, in any club situation, that is a club decision, as we talked about before. If I'm asked about some candidates, I'll express my opinion. Coley Campbell, who has been rumored to be somebody that they may be interested in, I don't think there's a finer executive in hockey. You know, he has played the game at all levels. He's coached the game at all levels. Was an assistant coach when Mike Keenan was coaching the Rangers to the Cup in 94. He's been with me now for, I don't know, maybe 10 years.
He knows the business.
He knows every aspect of the game. He knows how to build an organization. There, in my opinion, would be no finer person. Now, it's interesting, and the reason I raise this is there's all the speculation that I try to insert my people in general manager positions, which, based on what I described before, isn't true. I'll make recommendations if asked. In Coley's case, as good as I think he would be for the Leafs, the fact of the matter is it would be a tremendous loss for the league and for me personally, because he's a very close friend. So the last thing on a personal level and professional level that I'd like to see him do from the league office standpoint is leave. And so I'm certainly not pushing. Now, having said that, if the opportunity came and he wanted it, I would be the first to encourage him to follow his dreams if that's what he wanted. But the notion that somehow I would want to put him in a job, as far as I'm concerned, he can stay with me here forever. And so,
how about your relationship with Ron McLean?
I'm getting to that. We happen to have a very good relationship. We have a difference of opinion on a variety of issues. Ron, on a Hockey Night segment sometime in the last month, acknowledged that he was pro-player and pro-union in leading up to the work stoppage and during the work stoppage. And as a result, and he would be the first to admit it, that he would be tougher on me than he might have been on my with my counterpart in terms of interviews and everything else. Having said that, most people felt that our sparring sessions made for interesting television. I'm not so sure it served any purpose in terms of helping to promote our game, and I'm not so sure that fans actually loved to see us sparring. I'd rather see the intermission pieces devoted to what's happening on the ice, not the business of the game. But Ron and I have a very cordial relationship, and as I said, we don't agree on everything. And if anybody doubts my answer, when Don Cherry is here later, who I have a very close relationship with, ask him the question.
We're hoping to get to that as soon as we come back from a break. We're going to step out. We appreciate your patience. Stay on hold, all of the callers. We'll get to you as soon as we come back. And we have Don Cherry. We'll get Grapes plugged in, and then we'll get to your calls. This is all going to happen on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM 204, and NHL.com.
Destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah.
Welcome back to the NHL Hour. This is Gary Bettman. With me is Bill Clement. This is XM 204. And it is my great pleasure to welcome Don Cherry to the show. Don, how are you?
Jim Morrison and the Doors. I can't believe you had them on, Gary.
You know, now we're talking about music from our era. How are you?
Yeah. I'm very good. Listen, I know Ron was on, and he said, very surprisingly, he said that you were good. Well, I don't understand that. What does he mean by that?
I don't know. Let's not go there, but let me ask you a question. Is it true that you're currently in a car driving from Toronto to Pittsburgh with Ron?
And we are completely lost. I swear to God, we're completely lost in Pittsburgh. We're driving around. The girl is telling us turn left, turn right, and he's got us lost. You would expect that, eh, Gary?
Of course. Who's driving?
Ron.
Ron, of course. I always knew he was capable of getting lost. He does that in interviews with me, too. Hey, can I ask you?
Sure
you can. Oh, we have the navigation system in the background. You can't make this stuff up. How did you get the nickname Grapes?
Oh, I was just it's a long story. Eddie Shore fined me for a lot of money at the end, and one of his pets, and he never gave me the money back. And I said, I didn't want it back anyhow. I said, I don't have to be a guy like you. And he said, it's just sour grapes. So it came on, I hate to say it, by sour grapes. And that, but and then they said I didn't like it. So then it was actually, it was grapesy. That's what it was, grapesy. And it shortened down to grapes.
That's fascinating. In all the years I've known you, I never heard that story.
So, I know, I hate to tell it to sour grapes, but I can't lie to you, Gary.
You never do. So let's have people get to know a little bit more about you. How did you, give us your background in hockey, and how did you wind up as the preeminent figure in broadcasting in Canada with Coach's Corner on Hockey Night in Canada?
Well, yes, I'm a legend in my own mind. No, actually, I started out and won the Memorial Cup, played junior, went to Hershey. I was supposed to make the Boston Bruins, hurt my shoulder playing baseball. I spent the next 16 years in the minors, riding the buses. Then I got lucky. I got coaching the Boston Bruins, and Harry Sinnott hired me. I was absolutely sensational, coach of the year, as you know, Gary. And then I got fired by Harry Sinnott, didn't like me. I don't understand that. And then I went to Colorado, got fired there. And luckily, I got on the TV, and there I was, sensational, right off the bat. So I've been there for 23 years. And that's the whole story in a nutshell.
My understanding is you're going to be doing some work during the balance of the playoffs for ESPN. How did that come about?
I don't know. I just got a call, and they said they wanted to spruce up the playoffs, and they heard about my jacket, so they want to put me on, and I've got a smasher for tomorrow night. One of the best.
By the way, and that's a good segue, and for people just tuning in, we're talking to Don Cherry. Who dresses you, and how did you come to dress the way you do?
Well, it started in Rochester. I love Rochester, city of Rochester, one of my favorite cities. And then I got to Boston, and it got so that people like to, you know, see the nice clothes and the nice ties, and it got snowballed. Then I got on TV, and I started to wear plaids, and I went from plaids, and hey, all of a sudden, I've got, I don't know what I've got on now, but it seems the more outrageous I get, the more they like it. So I have fun with it. And by the way, I pay for my own clothes. I don't sponge off anybody. So I pay them own, and I pick out the fabric, and I made the measure. Beautiful, aren't they?
Have you ever ordered anything that when you put it on, you just said that's simply over the top, I can't wear it?
Never.
That doesn't surprise me. But
over the top, the better for me.
And what about the collars? I mean, they're quite unique.
Well, when he was young, he used to have those collars, and I loved the look of the 1930s, and that always came from the the 1930s look. So I don't know. It just makes me look. Somebody asked me, said, "Have you got a scar under there? Do they hold your neck up or what?" I said, "No, I just wear them. They look good."
So let's talk a little.
Very uncomfortable, though. But they say better to look good than to feel good.
Let's talk a little hockey. What's your biggest surprise so far in the playoffs?
Well, the way Montreal went out, I mean, that was a very poor, I don't know what other word is to say it, effort on their part. And I don't think they played very good. They all blamed it on Price, the goaltender. And I think he's the scapegoat. I think they played lousy, and they didn't deserve to be. That's the biggest surprise to me.
Although, interesting, I'm looking at Bill Clement, that Philadelphia Flyer homer, who's ready to jump out of his skin.
Where's the love for the Flyers, grapes?
He's saying the Flyers.
I don't think the Flyers played that great either.
Oh.
And I think, well, wait a minute, hold it. I just got through saying Montreal played lousy. Montreal chocha, I think, three games. It was Veron that saved you. That's the only thing that saved you guys, if you hadn't had a hot goaltender. But I tell you one thing, I'm looking forward to this Philly thing. It's going to be a war.
Who are you predicting will come out at the other end?
I'm predicting, with Billy sitting there, you're going to make me feel bad.
Well, actually,
I'm saying Pittsburgh will win. But I'll tell you one thing, there's going to be a lot of injuries, and there's a lot of hate. And, Gary, that just shows you, People like violence. They like hate. They like fights. And the Toronto Star today, it was funny, they had the Pittsburgh-Philly game. They had two guys fighting, and that's a paper that hates violence. So it'll be a dandy. I'll tell you, boy, it's this to me is going to be the best series of all.
Frequently, when I'm at speaking engagements, I get asked to articulate the role of fighting in our game. Let me hear your articulation of it.
Well, it only stands to reason. First of all, the players don't mind it. They seem to like it. The coaches don't mind it. They seem to like it. And the fans go absolutely wild who pay the price. The people that pay the tickets should call the tune. I don't understand it. The only time you guys don't like fighting, you're afraid of the media. And the papers come out and say something. The media, they get in free. If you have fighting in the game, all you have to do is look at all these scrums, silly scrums and everything. If the umpire and the referee said, go ahead, let them go, they'd all stop. And you take all the stars now. You take Mario, he with that instigator rule, come in. You can't protect the stars like Gretzky was protected and Nystrom and all that used to protect Bossy. It was in there. It was beautiful. The instigator rule is the worst rule that was ever put in any sports, as far as I'm concerned. The fans love fighting, and the people that are listening now know I'm right.
Nobody can argue with you. You've been frequently cited as one of the 10 most well-known or popular people in Canada. How does that affect your persona? How do you go out for a cup of coffee or walk the streets without getting mobbed?
No, I don't go. I'm pretty good. The only thing I don't do is go in bars anymore because, guys, you know, we have a lot of fun in bars. So I don't go into many bars. That's the only thing. But I have a lot of fun. People are fun. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. And people say, oh, you know, you can't go anywhere. You got to sign autographs. Are you kidding? I spent 16 years in the minors and coached for 5 years in the minors. Nobody knew I was alive. I'm the luckiest guy in the world when somebody comes up and asks me for an autograph.
We're talking to Don Cherry, the preeminent personality on Hockey Night in Canada. Don, there are a lot of critics who say that Hockey Night in Canada is actually rooting on a constant week-by-week basis for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and you in particular. How do you respond to that?
Of course I do. I was raised in Kingston. I love the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I'm telling you, anybody can love that team. It's got to be pretty good. How rotten they are, but I brought up in Kingston, right far from Toronto. Toronto was always used to Quaker Oats. Bill used to get those too, I'm sure.
Oh yeah,
and that was always my team. And as far as Hockey Night in Canada, when we do have the Leafs on, it's 500,000 more people watch it. So why wouldn't we? But we're not supposed to. I know we're Hockey Night in Canada, not Hockey Night in Toronto. But you're asking me, I'm telling you the truth.
Although it seemed that you converted in the course of these playoffs to root for the Canadians.
Well, Kirk Muller was there, and it was a Canadian team, you know, and I always root for the Canadian team, although most of the players are Canadian. But, and now the Canadians, we're going to lose some viewership because it's not a Canadian team. But Kirk Muller's there, and I rooted for them a little bit, but I'm very unpopular in Montreal. The French think I'm against them and all that stuff and everything, but hey, that goes with the territory.
But you're not, are you?
Well,
okay, don't answer. never mind. Let's move on to the next question. A caller called in before, and I want your candid response to this, and suggested that maybe Ronnie and I don't really like each other or get along. You've seen us together. What's your opinion on that question?
Oh, Gary, you want me to tell you, in the finals last year when you come in the studio, and you remember that, you were not very happy camper, and the words you said, if I look good, if I look bad in interview, you look good. And you were a little upset at the time, but I think deep down you like each other, but I think you get on each other's nerves, or he gets on your nerves.
No, he doesn't.
By the way, I'm going by a store that it's a watch store, right? And it used to be a hat store back in the 50s when I used to come in Pittsburgh when it was really dirty, and it was called Tucker's Hattery. No kidding, I just went by it. And Wayne McLean's going, I'll give you a tour of the whole Pittsburgh by the time he's finished.
You guys are still lost?
We're still, we're just running around, and that lady keeps talking to us. But it's nice. I'm having a good time.
The lady who's talking, the lady you're talking about is the navigation system, correct?
No, she stopped. She said, you guys are so stupid. She doesn't talk to us anymore.
Billy, do you have anything for Don before we let him go?
Grapes, I just got to tell you that I have an old book at home that's a book of quotes. And one of my, it's all sports quotes, and they're all humorous. And the one that I loved was yours, where you once said, when I was a kid, I used to pray every night to become a professional hockey player. Unfortunately, I forgot to mention the NHL, and I spent 16 years in the minors.
That's a true story. I want to be professional. One little slip of the tongue, see what happens, eh?
That's what happens in this business. Hey, I'm going to let you guys go so you can continue to be lost. Send Ronnie my love, and I'll see you guys at the rink.
Okay, Gary. See you, Bill.
Thanks for being with us. That was Don Cherry.
Unbelievable character and a great guy to be around as well. For all that persona and the caricature-like appearance that he has with the suit, he is a good-hearted, big-hearted, interesting, wonderful guy that loves our sport, top to bottom. We're going to step out. We'll come back. We'll get to your emails all on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM204 and NHL.com. Loving it, but I'm not a deadhead.
Well, we'll have to make you into one.
I will, because I like that. There are hints of Crosby, Stills, Nash-like harmonies and young harmonies in there, and I love that.
I loved watching the blank gaze on your face as the music came
like, Gary, help me, Gary. Help me.
That's all right. I didn't recognize the Atlanta Rhythm Section last week.
I know, but they're a little more obscure than the Grateful Dead.
There you go.
Yeah.
Should we take a call?
Yeah, go for it.
Andrew in Nova Scotia, you've been holding for a half hour, and we appreciate it. You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Hey, it's really cool to talk to you guys.
How come you're not at the World Championship game? Canada was playing Norway last time I checked.
I couldn't get a drive down to Halifax, actually.
Okay, that's a good excuse.
Yeah. I'm a Habs fan, and I was wondering what the NHL is going to do to celebrate the Habs' 100th anniversary or something, I think that's what they call it, next year, and I'll just hang up and take your answer, I guess.
We view the Habs' 100th anniversary as a very special time to commemorate. The All-Star Game's going to be in Montreal. The draft is going to be in Montreal. We are going to have a series of events, as is the club, and we'll be announcing them as it gets closer, but this will be a year-long celebration to commemorate what may be historically the most special franchise in all of sports.
An outdoor game has not been ruled out or approved yet either. Is that still a possibility?
It's something that has been discussed, and we haven't made any decisions on outdoor games, but there will be tons and tons of celebrations. We're looking forward to having a very special All-Star weekend there, and I think it's going to be a fun year for all hockey fans, but especially Habs fans.
If anybody knows how to celebrate, it's Quebecers, people in Montreal.
Leo in California. It's XM 204, and you're on with Bill and Gary.
Mr. Bettman, Mr. Clement, it's a pleasure to speak to you. Before I get into my things, Bill, we do miss you on NBC hockey games with the Doc.
You
worked like peanut butter and jelly.
Easy to work with Doc. Thank you.
You were great. Number one, why isn't the draft ever coming to Los Angeles or Anaheim? And number two, my second question. Why don't you answer that, Mr. Bettman, and maybe I can think of my second question.
Okay. The answer is we go to where we're requested to come. It gets bid out to the clubs. We do move it around, and if either the Ducks or the Kings were seriously interested in hosting the event, then that's something that we could probably make happen at one point in time. There are lots of clubs that want to host either the All-Star Game or the draft, and we try to move it around and accommodate all the clubs and the fans in all of our markets. And if the Kings and I said as and the Ducks are interested, that's something that gets right on our radar screen and could happen.
So it has nothing to do with the time zone?
No, because we would just schedule the start to deal with the time zone. In other words, we would either start earlier or later as necessary to when we wanted to broadcast this to the widest audience. So nobody's been ruled in and out. Actually, it certainly has nothing to do with the time zone because we were in Vancouver
right.
a couple of years ago. So, no, it has nothing to do with time zones. It has to do with the desirability that the clubs have in having us. And it's a huge undertaking. I wouldn't minimize
it. Right. I remembered my second question. I want to back up the referees. My son is 17 years old, and he's a referee out here in Los Angeles. So I know how, and I'm a scorekeeper at a famous facility where a team practices. I won't mention the name. But I know how difficult it is. So if anybody wants to badmouth referees, you know what? You go to a referee class, you go to a referee school, and then you become a referee, and you see how difficult it really is. And I'm talking about where you have a one-man system with the one referee and two linesmen, and you don't have the benefit of a replay.
None whatsoever. And you don't have the benefit of seeing it from a distance, because if you're sitting up high in the stands or in the press box, the game actually slows down, and you can see it a little more clearly in terms of what's going on. Flow, motion, and the like. When you're down there, you're skating and you're getting screened by players who are moving about you on the ice. It is impossible, and I think our guys do a terrific job. Not a perfect job, but as good as anybody can do. We have the best officials in the world.
Yeah.
And you know, when I hear that, I saw Rick Nash actually last night in Columbus. He had come in and was one of the people that eulogized John McConnell, and he was commenting that the refs are doing a good job in the World Championship, but they're nothing like our referees.
What a great concept it would be to have anybody that loves to get on the refs' backs to come out and have even a kid's game. If they could skate, give them a whistle, give them the rules, say, have at it, brother.
Well,
give it a try.
Actually, we let Ron McLean, who has been a constant critic of the officials, do, I think, a portion of a game in Buffalo during the preseason. And I think it was a bit of a wake-up call for him because he hasn't been nearly as critical on the officials, although he is an amateur official.
Sure.
But in any event, we appreciate the call of support and the acknowledgement of how difficult our guys have it. And I think our sport's harder to officiate than any other simply because of the speed that's involved, and you've got to know how to skate, and very well. How about Matt in Ohio? You're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Hey, you just brought up Columbus. I just went through Columbus.
Did you?
Yes. Commissioner, I got a question for you.
Name.
With the Eastern Conference, I'll ask these two questions and I'll hang up and miss them. But with the Eastern Conference and such a little travel time in between, and their round two was done on Sunday, why are they getting such a late start on Friday when they could start on Wednesday with Mellon Arena available, because I did my homework and checked. And for NBC not hosting the game this weekend, it can't be TV availability either. I'm just wondering why they get such a long break to get done a little bit sooner so people can get on with their summer project after the Cup is once done and hosted.
Well,
it's
a very good question, but we didn't finish the second round until early Monday morning, and so therefore we had Tuesday and Wednesday off as a practical matter. And it was based on building availability, scheduling, and trying to keep the series aligned throughout the 2 weeks. We felt that the best way to schedule it was to start the West on Thursday and the East on Friday. We have a scheduling guru, Steve Hatzepetros, who does these things, and we didn't want one series to get too far ahead of the other. And again, having really 2.5 days off between the end of one round and the beginning of the next, we didn't think there was anything wrong with that. And in fact, I do think we moved up the start of this series by a day, so we weren't completely holding back. I think that was the case.
I just think there was a lot of time in between for the East. I just think there was a lot of a lull, you know, where between fans there's just a lot of downtime when we're waiting to just get on. Let's go.
Well, tune in tonight, and you'll get going when the West, and your dreams will be fulfilled tomorrow in the East. But thank you for calling. Chris in Philly, you're on with Bill Clement and Gary. This is XM 204.
Good afternoon, guys.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I had one quick comment just about home ice and make sure XM never takes this channel off. It's a great station, not only for the entertainment, but the amount of knowledge that I've been able to pick up for teams outside of my local market and division. Learned a lot about different players and things that I did not know prior to this channel.
Well, on behalf of XM, we thank you.
All right. My question is actually about the broadcast schedule, and I was wondering why for the coming weekend games, Versus is broadcasting and NBC is not carrying any of the weekend games this coming weekend, that they're not covering up until about game five of either series.
NBC has prior commitments contractually, and they didn't have the time available to us. They are carrying a game on Saturday, May 17th, which will be game five, if necessary, Dallas and San Jose. And on Sunday, May 18th, Philadelphia at Pittsburgh at 2 p.m. on NBC, game five again, if necessary.
Yep. Detroit. We know it's Detroit. We know that your time zone. Yes, Dallas, San Jose.
I'm sorry. I did a brain cramp. Did I really say that?
That's okay. I mean, you're a busy guy, and you've seen all these. You were up watching them until 3 in the morning.
Did I really say that? Wow.
It's all right.
Brain cramp time.
That's okay.
In any event, that is the schedule, and NBC was pre-committed. You know, I can't even read clearly. Bad allergy week.
I think you're doing great.
No, I don't think so. That was quite a faux pas.
All right, we're going to dive into another call right away, and you can redeem yourself right here.
Or make it worse. Perry in Arkansas, you're on with Bill and Gary, and I hope this is XM 204, because I'm not sure where I am right now.
Yeah, I appreciate you opening up the phone lines to talk with the commissioner. I've appreciated a lot of the changes. I was listening to John Cherry's comments, and I hate to go in opposition to what he said, but I think the changes that have taken place in the game of hockey have made it a lot more fan-friendly, especially from the TV viewer's perspective, and I've enjoyed the changes that have come along. Glad you got the contract extension. Two questions, one specific and then one general. You know, specifically Game 4, Avs in the Wild, I felt was one of those games that just degenerated and hurt the marketability of hockey on a, you know, on a big stage with the playoffs going on. And I'm in Arkansas, and not in a big market area, so I didn't hear a lot if there was
What about that game didn't you like?
Well, man, it just degenerated at the end. Just the mugging taking place on ice. Of course, I lean towards the Avs more than I lean toward the Wild, so of course I might have a bit of a different perspective, but it just degenerated there. I think it was game four, was it not?
You're asking the wrong guy.
I just misread who was playing in this round. I can't remember back that far. Although it doesn't surprise me that in the intensity of the playoff series that the players really start to get on each other's nerves. And as long as they stay within the rules, that's one thing. But certainly anything that goes beyond the pale, Coley Campbell has to step in and deal with.
And there were no suspension. Listen, that's it's such a highly sensitized time of year for fans when they see whatever is happening to their team. If they think that their team is getting the raw end from another team, you're gonna speak up. Why, it's tough to be objective if you lean one way this year.
There's no question, because the differences are so small, and in the course of a series, sometimes you get to a level of hate, you know, in the course of it building up. But having said that, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't have the stats in front of me, we've had very little fighting.
Very little.
In the course of these playoffs, again, because I think people are concerned, the players are concerned about the consequences relative to penalties, mm-hmm. because a power play here or there can make the difference in the game.
I'm just anxious to see if John Stevens is going to suit up Riley Cote because of George Larocque. This series does have a chance to have a fight or two, if Riley Cote's in the lineup for Philadelphia.
You know, what nobody could see as you were saying that was the big smile on your face. I know what you were hoping for.
I'm telling you, I'm a fight fan and always have been, as long as I'm not in them.
You must have had your fair share.
Had a few. I was a glove delivery boy most of the time, just delivering the gloves to the guys that did most of the heavy lifting. But, yeah, I mean,
did you ever get knocked out?
from behind in junior. I got sucker punched and knocked completely out and then hit about 10 more times. It was a Steve Moore kind of thing, jaw broken and everything. So
you seem to have recovered nicely.
Didn't affect me.
Brad in Pennsylvania, you're on with Bill Clement and Gary. This is XM 204.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. Thank you for calling.
I got a question for each of you. Gary, with the I'm not going to beat a dead horse with the, you know, with everything that's going on with the refs. But another, I guess, aspect to the question is with the two-man system that's running the NHL, you know, is it, you know, am I wrong in saying that it is very different, I guess, than people are led on to believe from just a one-man system, correct?
Well, I think it's different in two respects. One, the game is so fast and there's so much going on, I don't think it's possible for one person to see everything that's going on. And therefore, there would be a lot of things that went on that were unpenalized with only one official. Secondly, if you notice the positioning of the officials, the guy who's down low is on top of the net for the most part, and he is getting a great look at the puck and the net. And so putting aside the use of video replay, we're getting a real good look is in terms of what's a good goal and what isn't a good goal. And finally, while people suggest that somehow there's makeup calls in the course of a game, you can't do that with two referees. You would need a coordinated effort. One guy can be psychologically saying in a one-man system, well, I called one, maybe I owe one the other way. The guys are instructed, the two men who are out there, the two referees are instructed to call what they see without regard to team, without regard to time of game, just react to the plays on the ice.
I'd never thought of that. You know, it makes it extremely difficult to have one of those coordinated makeup calls that's with two guys compared to one.
Now to go off on a little bit of a tangent, one objection that I frequently hear, particularly from commentators, is one referee will be 10 feet from the play, and the other referee will be down on by the blue line, and they'll say, well, how did the guy far away call it when the guy in close didn't call it? And the reason is they're supposed to be watching different things.
And different areas.
In different areas.
Makes
exactly
sense. If
right.
You see it, call it.
Exactly.
I understand that.
How about Pete in Virginia? You're on with Bill and Gary on XM 204.
Hi, guys. Glad to be on with you.
Well, nice to have you.
I was calling about the Chris Drury missed penalty.
Yes.
In the Sunday's game. I was just wondering if there's a way with an injury like that where there's blood on the ice or there's obviously something happened, if there's a way that you could actually get a video replay to help the refs out.
It's a great question, and it was an unfortunate miscall. But our officials are instructed not to guess. And you don't know how he got cut. There was no doubt he got cut. But was it his own stick? Was mm-hmm. it a teammate's stick? Was it the puck? And none of the officials on the ice, neither the two referees nor the two linesmen, saw it. And we don't think our game lends itself to video replay in the course of the game, other than for determining whether or not it's a good goal. And when you look at how difficult video replay is in all sports, I think that's the right decision. It would slow down the game. It would complicate it. And frankly, sometimes even with video replay, based on the angles of the camera, you really can't tell exactly what happened with that amount of precision. I'm not happy that they missed that call, and it's clear that they did. But, you know, it unfortunately, that's a fact of life in our game, and it's a game of mistakes.
No mistake about the buzz that there is in Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and Detroit and Dallas. Detroit and Dallas kick it off tonight at 7:30. Pittsburgh and Philly tomorrow night, 7:30. It's all good from here on out. Have fun, everybody. Gary, good to see you again. I'll see you next week, I hope.
Look forward to it. That'll be three in a row, a hat trick for you.
There we go. Coming up next, it's In the Slot, Phil Esposito and Jim Taddy right here on XM 204. Thanks for being with us today, everybody.